Back together again, you and I chatting it up Wednesday midweek style, January 28th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. A pair of bills from a veteran state house member concerning the sales of so-called nip bottles of alcohol caught my eye to kick off the program. One bill would attach a 10-cent refundable deposit to every nip bottle sold in the state. The other bill would completely ban the sale of nips in Connecticut. Southington Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson and Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar both chimed in on a growing controversy surrounding a veteran state lawmaker and state funding for a major nonprofit agency. And CBS News reporter Susie Jones joined us from Minneapolis concerning continued anti-ICE unrest in that city.
Well, guess what? It's back. Yes, it didn't go anywhere. You knew it was coming back. The boomerang effect. What am I talking about? Well, I'm back. Chris is back. We're back. You're back. We're all back, 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 back. Right here on WICC. You know what's coming back? And I applaud this. It'll probably never pass. But it just to show you that every so often I do support something a Democrat puts up there. I do, right? There is a bill coming up, according to the inside investigator here. And we've talked about this before, and I have not changed my stance on this. I have not had a come to Jesus moment on this. I believe in allowing responsible adults to do stuff that won't harm me or you or anybody else when they're responsible. The bottom line is, to me, there's not enough responsible lights out there anymore. What am I talking about? I talk about this all the time. Nips. Yes, and there's a bill that's going to be introduced by Democratic State Rep. Mary Mushinsky of Wallingford. I know her husband well. He may be listening right now. There is going to be a bill introduced in the short session. Now, the short session of the General Assembly begins a week from today, Wednesday the 4th of February, year of our Lord, 2026. Couple of bills here introduced. Now, what happens? It's a short session. Who knows? But one would amend the deposit on these things because everybody's agog. Oh, we got to keep nips. Because look at the money we get now for the cities and towns for environmental stuff. And another bill would ban the sale of nips completely. Now, there are some states that do that. And I will say this, and I've gotten some, shall we say, blowback on this online and on my personal messages. Hey, shut up about the nips. I like my nips. Whatever. I cannot understand why we sell nip bottles of booze. I don't get it. We don't sell individual cigarettes. We don't sell individual marijuana joints. We don't sell individual pills of over-the-counter stuff or prescription medicine. Why in the hell do we sell small bottles of booze? Because we all know what these bottles generally end up being used for, to drink on the QT. Well, how do you know that, Paul? How do I know? Walk around the city of Bridgeport every so often. Walk around a parking lot. Walk around a parking garage. Look down. Jeez. There's a nip bottle of Fireball, honey. Did that just grow here, Maud? No, it didn't. Catherine Revelo's story, an effort to either ban nips, small bottles of alcohol in the state, or subject them to Connecticut's bottle bill, is going to return in the upcoming legislative session. That, according to Democratic State Rep. Mary Mushinsky of Wallingford, she had a news conference today, the 28th, a week before the session begins. She's announcing two versions of a bill aimed at controlling the number of nips sold in our state. And we sell millions of these things every year. Millions. Well, Paul, what's the difference between a nip and a full bottle of booze? You know damn well what the difference is. It's easier to drink and drive when you have nip bottles. Don't say you don't understand this. Come on. We're not that stupid here. One of her bills would ban the sale of nips entirely. Another would add nips to the list of containers that have a 10-cent refundable deposit under Connecticut's bottle bill. Mushinski's been trying to pass a bill in either a full ban or reform on the sale of nips for years because she says their sale increases several problems in the state, and they do. Now, back in 2021, a bottle bill law added a 5-cent surcharge to the sale of each nip sold in the state. Liquor wholesalers are required to pass this on to municipalities. They can use the funds on environmental efforts to reduce waste and litter. According to a report from the state, the state, up until last September, now get this, from October 1 of 2021 to September 30 of 2025, the state sold 94 million nips during that time. Okay, maybe people are responsible. Maybe they only want to have a little bit of alcohol in the house. Whatever, I understand it. But come on, what percentage of that do you think ended up being consumed while somebody was behind a wheel? Come on, don't tell me it's nothing. And look, I understand they're trying to find a middle ground here with the money from the sale of each nip going to a city or town. I get it. But again, I don't understand. Well, I do understand why it's done. It's a money thing. I get that. But come on. I don't get it. People want to buy alcohol and get as drunk as a skunk. Why, by the way, do skunks get really drunk? I don't know. Drunk as a skunk. There's probably an origin of that phrase somewhere. But why do we sell nips? Honestly, why is that? I mean, we know why, but I don't understand that. We know it's illegal to sell what are called Lucy's, not like Lucy, like, hey, Lucy, you got to explain to Fred. No, not that Lucy. As in L-O-O-S-I-E, a loose cigarette. You can't sell those. You can't sell loose joints. It's a crime to get a prescription of medication and then sell pills one by one. So why on God's earth do we sell nips? You don't think that contributes to alcoholism on the roads? Come on. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you want to call up and say, come on, Paul, loosen up. You're an old fart on this. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Wallingford Democratic State Rep. Mary Mushinski is going to try in the short session coming up on Wednesday. She said today she wants to either ban nips altogether or to add a 10-cent refundable deposit under the Connecticut bottle bill on nips. What do you think? I frankly don't understand why we sell nips in the first place. All right, we're talking about nips. We'll get to ICE later on. We'll get to the mess surrounding Doug McCrory later on. Dan Haar's going to stop by. One of our favorites, State Senator Rob Sampson's going to stop by. We'll have a live report from a WCCO correspondent in the Twin Cities. We'll talk about that and that craziness there. By the way, I've got something said by a left-wing district attorney financed by George Soros that will make your head spin. The left, the progressives out there can't stop. They can't stop the Nazi references if they tried. But we'll get to that later. Right now we're talking about nips. You know, the small bottles, 50 milliliters generally or slightly less. We've talked about this for years and years. A lot of people want to see him outlawed, including me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you disagree with me. I don't know what good they do. Tell me what good the sale of nips does. Well, I like alcohol, but well, that's good. Buy a full bottle. Oh, you can't hide a full fifth of scotch. You can't hide a full fifth of scotch in the car, can you? No. You can't do that. Oh, you can't do that, though. You like those nips, huh? Yeah. Not good. Now, Mary Mushinsky, who I've known for a little time, Democratic State Rep Wallingford, she's introducing two bills. One would either get rid of nips altogether. The other would add a 10% deposit to the nips. What do you think? I don't understand why this is done when you can sell loose cigarettes. Well, you can sell them. It's not legal. You can sell illegally singular joints. Why do we do that? I don't know. Let's kick it off today. Let's go to Stamford. Carol. Carol, you're on WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm good, Carol. What's up? What do you got?
I think not selling nips will force the alcoholic to buy the bigger bottle.
Uh-huh.
At least the person who's trying to do better for themselves. But I also will say that I think the bars are a much bigger problem with the alcohol on the roads.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And you can buy a pre-roll joint when you go to the dispensary. And no, you cannot buy a single cigarette.
Yeah. Look, and Carol, but, I have heard.
You know what?
Yeah.
Put the 10 cent deposit on it, but don't ban it.
Okay. And Carol,
what's the reason? Do we know what the reason is for wanting the ban on them?
Well, because they're
being thrown out the window?
Yeah. In other words, people say, look how many are found in parking lots. In fact, they did a study here. And Carol, I do have to run. Thank you. How about this? At the news conference today, Tom Metzner from Connecticut Town's Nixing the Nips. Boy, say that five times fast. Connecticut Town's Nixing the Nips. Yes. Purse those lips. He said it is clear from efforts volunteers are making to pick up nips and roadside litter. So this group says that people are drinking and driving and throwing the bottles out the window. Metzner said volunteers from his organization had collected a full bag of nips, now get this, within a quarter mile of a package store. All which, he said, went out the window. See, part of me is very libertarian on this. If you want to buy booze and drink till your heart's content at home where you're not going to hurt anybody on the road, then go ahead. I don't care. Smoke your weed, drink your nips, stuff your fat face with Doritos and dip. I don't care. But I gotta, you know, come on. You know people are drinking and driving with this. Now, to Carol's point, I have heard that from people who have maybe kind of struggled with alcohol a little bit, saying if the nips weren't around, I would have bought a full bottle. All right, maybe I get that. I'll respect that. Jeff in Westport. Jeff, how are you? What's up?
Hey, Paul, you old fuddy-duddy.
What?
Come on now. You old fuddy-duddy.
Oh, come on. You don't think, Jeff, people slam those suckers down while they're driving? Come on.
Well, you know why they never vote for that?
Why?
The ban on nips?
Yeah.
It's because all the people representing us in their little briefcases have their little shelves of vodka, so at lunch they can take it real quick.
Well, there you go.
They have to vote on it.
Well, there you go. That's part of the problem, Jeff, too. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Come on, huh? Jeez. All right, let's go to Bill in New Haven. Bill, what do you got for me today? Bill.
Chappy, they're moving me to Yale now because I complained about the heat. And, all
and
that.
You got heat or what?
No, they said I was complaining too much. So now they're going to move me out of here.
Yeah.
Down to Yale. Yeah, somewhere in Yale or whatever.
That's not bad.
Anyway, oh, I guess. I can't complain about the heat.
Okay.
Right. Anyway, nips. Yeah, have a nip. Have your beers.
Yeah.
But it's a garbage can. Remember the old garbage can?
Oh, yeah. But the problem is, Bill, they're throwing them out the window while I drive.
Because that's not good.
No.
I drink beer every day. I love my beer.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with nips. But,
yeah, but you're not doing it in driving, are you?
Hell, I drive. I'm on disability, pal.
Okay,
I'm
walking
a cane.
All right, Bill. I just want to make sure.
Anyway, Seattle, every time Seattle won, there was a new pope.
Yeah.
A new pope.
Oh, that's it. All right, Bill. Thanks. So Bill's saying Seattle's going to win the Super Bowl because there's a new pope and he doesn't drive. He likes his nips, though. See, that Bill's got it right. If you're going to do a nip, for God's sake, use a cane and don't drive. Now, you may have been hearing or listening or reading or listening to what we're doing here on the radio station regarding covering a, I guess you would call it a scandal, I guess, with now fingers being pointed here and there, and the governor saying one thing and the Democratic leadership saying the other, another thing, Republicans looking on kind of smiling at this whole thing, and the Democratic leadership not listening to the governor. You can't script this lunacy. State Senator Rob Sampson joins us. District 16, Cheshire Prospect, Southington, Woolcott, and Waterbury. Rob, it never ends, Rob. It goes on and on and on. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this is just the latest in a long string of scandals and corruption.
Okay, so now what is the latest, Rob, here? And I've done as much as I can on the show to make sure people understand what's going on here. You have Doug McCrory, who was who after an FBI probe that I guess may still be ongoing, a state audit, and again, Senator McCrory is innocent until proven guilty. We all know that. Let's be upfront with that. But there are a lot of things, shall we say, Rob Sampson, floating above him, hovering over his head. Again, he's innocent till proven guilty. But the governor has asked him, has he not, Rob, hey, Doug, step back a little here. Let's find out what's going on. And he has said no, right? And the Democratic leadership has said no. So what do we know, if anything, new on this?
Right. So, Paul, thank you very much for stating from the outset, innocent until proven guilty is certainly the point. And I'll be very careful about what I'm going to say. My first reaction is it just doesn't look very good for Senator McCrory or these nonprofit organizations that are involved. If you look at the DEC, the Department of Economic and Community Development's audit results, I mean, some of the language that they use is just so damning. Pervasive governance failures, systemic internal control weaknesses, and patterns of conduct that strongly suggest potential fraud and misappropriation of public funds. I mean, it sounds like there's some definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would love your listeners to understand is that, the state government under one-party rule, the Democrats have been running the Connecticut legislature for 40 years. They've had control of the executive branch for 16 years. They have basically all of the purse strings. They control everything. And they give away millions and millions of taxpayer dollars every year with very little oversight. It's almost impossible, actually, to see inside and understand what's really going on. So when something like this breaks, for me, it is a real telltale sign that there is a lot more that is going on than we are even aware of.
So, Rob, in this situation, right, correct me if I'm wrong, but nobody is officially asking for Senator McCrory to step down to end his legislative career, correct? The governor simply asked him, Rob, if I read these reports right, to say, hey, step back from your leadership post until this all plays out. Am I right there or not?
I believe that's the governor's comments, as well as the Republican leadership in the House and Senate.
Yeah.
I've also made a similar statement. Again, I'm a very strong believer in our, civil liberties, and the justice system has to go through the process.
Yeah.
I don't want to condemn this man or anyone else unfairly. I just want to make sure that people are certainly paying attention. We don't want something like this to go by the wayside or get swept under the carpet without a full investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like I said, tip of the iceberg in my view, because even last year I debated on the floor of the Senate when they were giving out, multiple, maybe dozens of different similar grants to organizations that we could not even track down who they were. You would try and look up the organization that's the recipient of, say, $300,000 taxpayer dollars, and they don't have a website. They don't have a registration with the Secretary of State. I mean, it's like, who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're being given money, taxpayer, hard-earned taxpayer money in a state economy that where people are struggling. I mean, we're the third highest taxed state in the country, third highest electric rates. Affordability is everything. And here you have a state government run by one party for decades, and basically they're taking liberties with the taxpayer dollars.
And that's the whole thing, Rob. And Rob Sampson is the guest talking about the controversy swirling around State Senator Doug McCrory. Again, the investigation goes on. That's the thing, Rob, that so many people have told me, reporters, people covering this whole thing, is that the process of awarding these millions of dollars in state tax money to nonprofits, okay, people say, well, that's great. We should take some money for nonprofits. But I guess it's only clear and transparent up to a point. Like, you guys and gals see the name here of who's getting the money, but then after that, are we lax in what we expect from these organizations to come back and say, thank you very much for the money, and this is what it will be specifically used for, Rob? Is there enough of that or not?
Well, there's definitely not enough oversight, Paul. I mean, some money that is given out by the state government certainly goes through a lot of procedural steps, through bonding, through public hearings, through things like that. But this type of funding, which is done through what's commonly known as an earmark style, legislative program, it's essentially a lawmaker, a majority party lawmaker, more times than not, simply just adds it as a line item mm-hmm. to another bill or a budget. And sometimes this stuff happens during special session where there's not even a hearing on any of this stuff. And really, we're left as members of the minority, often given legislation moments before it has to pass, just to ask questions. I asked questions of Senator Kathy Austin on many of these different earmarks that were included in the most recent budget, and she didn't have answers for me. And in fact, there's no answers to questions like, what is this money for? How will it be used? Who will keep track of whether or not it is used for the intended purpose? It's shocking, really, that it can happen in that way. And I remember, it's all coming back to me now. We had this debate at the end of the last legislative session. And when asked about it, the Democratic leadership basically said, well, we sometimes award these different earmarks to lawmakers that we like, or we want to help them.
Oh, that's
in their
nice. Difference. That's nice.
That is no way to run government. It is a corruption on its face.
Hey, Rob, finally, you guys and gals are going into this special session a week from today, February 4th, short session, because it's an election year and all the seats are open, 151 in the House, 36 in the state Senate. What might we see here from the majority? I'm reading things about outlawing facial recognition. I'm seeing things about AI. I'm reading rumblings about we're going to get in the middle and, tell supermarket chains how many self-checkouts they can have. Are we in for a short but viable spate of lunacy, Rob? What do we have coming up here?
Lunacy is an understatement when it comes to the Connecticut legislature. Let me tell you, Paul. I fully expect, just in my experience, the special session looks just like a regular session.
Yeah.
It's just crammed, packed. In a tighter, smaller time frame.
Yeah.
It is an election year. I think that the various individual Democratic lawmakers are going to push their individual agendas like they always do.
Mm-hmm.
I think where you start to see the brakes put on is when these bills actually get through the committee process.
Yeah.
Then I think they start to play a little more politics. So, it's an election year. Let's hold off on some of this more, I would say controversial items. Although, for me, the Democrats have only one game plan, which is to inject national politics.
Oh, sure.
Inject Trump.
Yeah.
And now it's ICE. It's all this.
Everything's
stuff.
ICE now.
Talk.
Everything. Hey,
yeah,
Rob, God forbid. Hey, Rob, God forbid they lower the electric bills. But let's add another layer of protection from ICE. Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
These people have been in power for decades. They own every last ounce of the affordability problem, and they are just trying to deflect from it. Do not let them convince you they're going to fix the problem they created.
All right. And on that note, Rob Sampson, Republican State Senate member, District 16, if you're in Cheshire, Prospect, Southington, Wolcott, and Waterbury, Rob is your guy. Rob, thanks. Appreciate the time. Keep your head above water there. Don't let the craziness overcome you, okay? Okay. Breathe deeply. It'll all get better eventually. Right, Rob?
Okay. Always my pleasure. Thank
all
you,
right,
Paul.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. All right. District 16 there. Once again, Wolcott, Waterbury, Southington, Prospect,
and Cheshire. It's Cheshire Relax, I know. Man, you people.
Dan Haar's here, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist for his weekly Wednesday check-in. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, and how are you today?
Good. My father's turning 100 in July.
God bless him.
1926.
God bless him. That's great. Yeah, well, you know, that's a long time, Dan. I had an uncle who was 102. That's a long time. God bless
him.
Yeah,
well, you know, we're all getting there. I was shoveling snow this weekend. I don't do any kind of service, and I have a big driveway.
Yeah.
And I don't have a machine either. I just do it by hand. And my friend says to me, he says, take it easy out there.
Yeah,
you're
really?
Not 60. You're not 60 anymore.
Yeah, please, take it easy. All right, Dan, as only you can, you sent me a message on stuff you wanted to talk about today. And in this message, you blended Doug McCrory, Ben Proto, Ned Lamont, Martin Looney, Christy Nome, and a few other things. So lay that out for my listeners, because I had a laugh when I read it.
Well, Ben, it starts with Ben Proto, the Republican state chairman, sent a message out, I guess you'd call it a release or a statement, yeah, on the website, that it's ironic that Governor Lamont is criticizing Christy Nome and calling for her to be, you know, replaced, when he took it easy on Doug McCrory, who, of course, is the state senator under, sure, investigation now involving grants in his district. And the irony of that is, while, you know, Ben may have a point, and I'm not denigrating his point,
mm-hmm,
is that there are two ways of looking at what the governor said. The governor said that he thinks that McCrory should take a step back. And what he meant when we clarified it with him, and I was there that day, was that was immediately after the audit report came out,
yeah,
the next day. And so it was a week ago today, as a matter of fact. And what he meant was he thinks he should resign from his position as education chairman and, mm-hmm, a couple of other positions that he holds, right? And which is, okay, that's a position that one can hold. But the irony is that Marty Looney, the Senate president pro tem, met with Lamont later that day. And you know, I mean, there's a polite way to say it. He basically told him to pound sand.
Exactly.
Right? So the governor was sort of caught betwixt, you know, betwixt and between.
Yeah.
But it is, I think, if there's a connecting, and I'll get to the Larson thing in a minute.
Yeah.
But if there's a connecting thread in this, it's that everybody's on edge. You know, everybody's on edge on these news events. They're serious things. And it's not that we've never had violence or corruption, mm-hmm, before,
yeah,
but it just seems like the atmosphere is, mm-hmm, more rife with division. So, and then the Larson,
yeah,
thing was that I picked up on Luke Bronin, the former Hartford mayor, who's running in an unusual race against the 28-year incumbent John Larson,
yeah,
for the first district seat in the House. In the U.S. House, Luke was the only person, is the only person calling to abolish ICE, right? So he calls to abolish ICE, and Larson's people feel like, well, you know, we too were very hard on Christy Nome and ICE.
Yeah.
And the next day, which was yesterday or the day before,
mm-hmm,
Larson goes out and makes a lot more noise about ICE than he had before.
Yeah.
So all these things are happening, and I, another sort of thread in this is that you might see, in part because of the action or the reaction of the National Rifle Association,
yeah,
you know, against the not against what happened, but against the statements that,
yeah,
he shouldn't have come to the protest or to protest armed,
yeah.
And the NRA said, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So there are all these sort of connective tissues swirling around here, having to do with rights, the human rights and what your legal rights are, whether it's, you know, whether it's Doug McCrory having a right,
sure,
to due process, or Alex Pretty having a right to live,
yeah,
or on and on.
Before we get to the migration story to wrap up, quick question though, Dan, do you think
that it's a delicate tread for maybe John Larson and other Democrats here because they're still a little skittish after defund the police. I've been asking over the past few days on my show, do Democrats and progressives have to be careful that abolish ICE doesn't become this cycle's or the 2028 cycle's defund the police? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, the answer is yes. And to your point, John Larson, when he stepped up, and I'm not saying he stepped it up just because of I wrote about Luke Broner, but when he stepped up his anti-ICE, you know, commentary or rhetoric, what have you, what he's saying is that ICE should be, I'm looking for the words right now.
Reimagined?
Well, it was no stronger than reimagined, but he still didn't say the magic word.
Yeah, abolished.
Which is abolished, right? And so somebody today speculated to me that maybe the House caucus is advising members don't say abolish.
Yeah.
Right? Because there are, you know that even AOC is not saying abolish right now.
Yeah.
She said abolish last spring. Last spring she said about, but in this go around, somebody pointed out to me that even Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez is not saying abolish. So it's a loaded word.
Yeah, sure is. Migration patterns, Dan, to finish up here, in the state, out of the state, what's Connecticut doing? Who's coming? Who's leaving?
Connecticut, if you look at the numbers and you say that Connecticut is in since COVID, and it's been up and down, it's not steady, but because immediately after COVID, we attracted people in. But Connecticut has lost an average of 5,500 people a year to other states in net. But you understand that 80,000 move in and 85,000 move out.
Yeah.
So the net is about 5,000 out. And while that isn't good and while you don't want to see it, number one, it is significantly offset by foreign in-migration.
Mm-hmm.
Connecticut, come to find out, I reported today because I didn't know this until I ran the numbers last night. I actually made a spreadsheet, you know, just like we used to do.
Wow.
And Connecticut is top seven in percent by population of foreign migrants coming here. Right. Whether they be legal or illegal, it doesn't matter. The census doesn't care. You know, they want to know who's here. That doesn't. Right. So I say I don't say illegal as a noun, you know, whether they are here legally or not.
Uh-huh.
But and then you have other states like the states that we compete against, the blue rich states, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Illinois and Maryland. They're 3 and 4 times. And in the case of New York, 5 or 6 times as high a percent out migration as Connecticut. California has lost 1.7 million people to other states in net, right? So when you look at it that way, Connecticut is not so bad off. The bottom line is we're still gaining population.
Yeah. All right. Dan Harhurst,
that's,
Connecticut.
That's Dan O'Keefe, the Economic Development Commissioner, makes that point.
Yeah.
We're still growing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, 5,000 people net either way. I mean, come on, that's a couch change. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. Dan, thank you. Have a great rest of the week. And for God's sake, buy a snowblower, will you please? Be careful.
Not going to do it.
Come on.
Not going to do it.
All right, Dan, thanks,
man. Not going to do it.
I'm going to do it. Thanks, Dan.
Not going to do it.
Appreciate it, Dan Harhurst. Bye-bye. What is going on the ground in Minneapolis? Yeah, we get the news top and bottom of the hour, but let's go to somebody who's actually watching the situation there. Reporter Susie Jones joins us from a legendary radio station, WCCO, in Minneapolis. Hey, Susie, good afternoon. It's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. So as things stand now, what is going on? In fact, last night I saw protesters had gone to Governor Walz's office, and they were protesting out there, criticizing him for talking to the White House. What's the latest we have on all this?
Well, I would say at this point, after Gregory Bovino and other federal agents left with border control, there was a sense of optimism, perhaps cautious optimism that this might be winding down. But again, there is still a palpable feeling of rage, of sadness, of frustration, of feeling helpless, like there's really nothing anyone can do.
So what do, and is there any inkling, Susie, about what specifics may have been talked about between the governor and the mayor and the White House to de-escalate this thing? Are they trying to come to some sort of agreement here where both sides can kind of come away with something here? What's the feeling on that?
I think that's definitely what's happening, is that people are trying to, A, save face so that neither side feels as though they're giving in. Obviously, the governor, Governor Tim Walz, and the president spoke over the phone, President Trump calling it a good call. Governor Walz saying that that the state is asking for an impartial, independent investigation into the shooting of Alex Preti. You might remember that right after mm-hmm. that shooting, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which is an agency that is nonpartisan and it's a unit that is used all over the world to come in to investigate use of force incidences involving law enforcement. And they were told to leave, that they had it under control, and basically blocked Minnesota from being part of a shooting in the city, mm-hmm. in the state. So that was something that went to the federal court to allow Minnesota investigators to be involved in that. Trump said in the aftermath of that talk that he himself wanted an investigation, an impartial, fair investigation. So some of that gave people a sense of hope and optimism. But as you say, people are still on edge, as there are still boots on the ground. There are still agents arresting people every day in this city and state.
All right. Susie Jones, WCCO Radio. Susie, thank you. We appreciate the time. Take care and be safe, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Susie Jones there. There you go.